This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 22nd of March 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 21st of March 2013, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. No special announcements this week. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 22nd of March, the sun rose at just about 6:05 this morning and will set at 6:25 this evening. And Wednesday of next week, the 27th of March, sunrise is at about 5:05 in the morning and sunset is at 6:30 in the evening. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. And there is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The headlines this week are Damning Report on City Prison, Campaigners Ignored as Cabinet says give as Cabinet OKs Bushfields Development, and Fantastic Scanners Delight Hospital Staff. So there's a one of the third of the headline stories is a good news story, which is always nice to hear. Anyway, we'll start off with the first headline story.
Damning report on city prison. A damning report has slammed falling standards at Winchester Prison. The Category B jail has deteriorated sharply and is now of serious concern, Chief Inspector of Prisons Nick Hardwick said in a report published yesterday. Amidst a catalogue of poor performance, two severely disabled prisoners were crammed for 23 and a half hours a day into a cell designed for one. They had not showered for months and relied on other inmates to take them their meals, Her Majesty's Inspector of Prisons found during the inspection last October from the 15th until the 19th. Staff were unaware that the two could not use the shower on their landing as it was not adapted. A third of the 680 prisoners told inspectors illegal drugs were easily available, while one in ten developed a drug habit whilst inside. Drug use was relatively high, and too few were inspected of taking drugs were tested. More than half had felt unsafe, while there was insufficient action to tackle violence. Inspectors witnessed foul abuse towards vulnerable prisoners in the exercise yard. Almost four out of five segregated inmates felt unsafe at some time, while inappropriate sexual images of naked women were found on their wing. The day-to-day experience of many prisoners was poor, with insufficient activity places. Resettlement work, preparing inmates for release, was weak. Mr. Hardwick said the new governor, David Rogers, was tackling its problems. He said, "Until shortly before the inspection, Winchester was neglected and drifting. There had been pockets of good practice, and although many staff did their best, their efforts were often haphazard, inconsistent, and badly coordinated. The new leadership was aware of many of the problems, and we saw early signs of a determined effort to tackle them." The inspectorate also found that resources were stretched, with problems made worse by a lack of stable leadership. Governor David Ward was on sick leave before his replacement by Mr. Rogers last September. Mr. Rogers, aged 46, in charge of a £13 million annual budget and 300 staff, said, "The place was struggling, to be frank. Like anything, to have a ship without a captain, it was slightly rudderless. I'm starting to import some of my vision and morals. In this environment, that is very important. It is a belief born out of 22 years in the prison service." Francis Crook, chief executive of the Howard League for Penal Reform, said, "It is exceptionally disturbing to see a prison with a good reputation collapsed to such lows. This damning report is yet another symptom of our overstretched and wasteful justice system. This is a prison where inmates didn't feel safe, and the vulnerable were abused, where drugs were easily available, but laundry facilities not. Graffiti was found throughout, including sexual images, but 95% of prisoners struggled to get on programs to help them turn their backs on crime." Winchester MP Steve Bryan said yesterday, "I have been concerned for some time that constant changes in leadership were having a negative effect, not least in its ability to meet the key objective of reducing reoffending. I met very recently with Mr. Rogers, and there is certainly no hiding from the bare truth of this report. I share the inspector's view that there are positive signs of a determined effort to tackle Winchester's problems, including a very tough new program to tackle the high prevalence of drugs. The new prison team now need the stability and the space to put this right." Some rare good news is that an Anglican chaplain has been appointed after a gap of several years. The Reverend Marina Brain was licensed and installed by the Venerable Michael Harley, Archdeacon of Winchester, last week. Mr. Rogers said, "I am delighted to welcome such an experienced chaplain to our senior management team, and am certain that Marina will be a tremendous asset in the future development of the chaplaincy team."
Campaigners ignored as Cabinet okays Bushfield's development. Winchester civic chiefs have rejected pleas from campaigners to save Bushfield Camp from future development. A planning inspector recently designated 20 hectares of the site as, quote, "land allocated for employment," unquote, after it was initially labelled an opportunity site in the City Council's district local plan. Last Wednesday, March the 13th, Cabinet approved the inspector's changes despite objections from civic groups, parish councils and residents. The inspector made 30 changes, which also included raising the amount of housing developed from 11,000 to 12,500. Cabinet was told it had to accept all the changes to fully adopt the plan or go back to square one to start again, leaving the district with no planning controls. But Richard Baker of the City of Winchester Trust said, "The Trust strongly maintain that because of the contribution that the Bushfield site makes to the landscape setting of Winchester, that the inspector's recommendation should not be adopted by the council." He added, "If this system dictates that Bushfield Camp should be developed, then you should not adopt the plan and take the consequences." Chris Corcoran for Twyford Parish Council agreed the council should re-examine the plan, particularly around Bushfield. "A second look at Bushfield would be procedurally annoying, but no more than that, and would not damage the effectiveness of 99% of the plan," said Chris Corcoran. But Cabinet approved the changes and said they risked losing planning control if they did not. Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said, "We are not looking at a pick-and-mix situation. Our only alternative is to not adopt the plan and have none of the policies and safeguards that people will benefit from. The inspector has accepted that any development of Bushfield must be of an exemplary standard and meet all the issues over design and sustainability that members of the public will be consulted about." Speaking outside the meeting, Bushfield Down Supporters Group, that's BDSG, leader Barbara Guthrie said, "The most important thing for us is our application for village green status for Bushfield Down. But my gut reaction is that the camp is a particularly important area to maintain open space." Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney also raised concerns over the 1,500 extra houses the inspector recommended. "With just under 50,000 homes," said Kelsey Lerney, "in the district currently, this would be a 25% increase, which is very significant. It will create extra infrastructure requirements, and 1,500 extra homes means another primary school. And we know how hard the county is finding it to provide just one new school. Our concern over Bushfield continues to be we are going to end up with a bog-standard M3 business park, out of character with Winchester and of little addition to town employment." But Councillor Lerney added she had no choice but to accept the inspector's changes so the council can retain control. Councillor Robert Humby, portfolio holder for strategic planning, said, "This is the result of 6 years' worth of work and consultation, and we have arrived at these figures. We said there was a top range, and so we could be looking at a greater number of houses, and the inspector had said we need to use that greater number. We are now in control of our own plan, and everybody should be congratulated." The plan was due to go before full council for final approval. A public inquiry will follow later this year for the local plan part 2, looking at development in more detail. The future of BDSG's application for village green status will be decided at the High Court in London in June. The Church Commissioners, which owns the land, has taken Hampshire County Council to judicial review after the latter said the application should go to a public inquiry. The review takes place on June the 26th and 27th.
Fantastic scanners delight hospital staff. Top-of-range equipment is as good as it gets. Out of disaster has come something better. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital has replaced the MRI and CT scanners destroyed in the blaze just over a year ago. The high-tech equipment is housed within a new and improved unit, completely restored since it was reduced to rubble. CT scans began last week, while the MRI is expected to open to patients this week. Staff said they were very happy with the new equipment. Dr. Julian Elford, lead consultant radiologist, said, "Our new CT scanner is fantastic. The things that this can do will increase what we as a hospital can do. It's one of only a few in the south of England and uses a very low dose of radiation that you would normally find in an X-ray machine. Our whole unit was good before, but we think it's better now. It's not possible to overstate how good this equipment is. It is as good as it gets across the country." Donna Green, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, said, "We're really excited about this and we have some fabulous facilities linked into the unit. All the good things from the old department have been maintained and we have improved it for new patients. I think patients would be pleasantly surprised with this top-of-the-range equipment." The Philips 1.5T Ignina MRI scanner and the GE HD750 Discovery CT scanner each cost just over £1 million each. The unit also includes another CT scanner that survived the fire. The new MRI scans faster and in higher definition, while it is also more comfortable for patients and includes calming mood lighting. Meanwhile, the CT scanner can now make more accurate diagnoses, particularly in cardiac patients, and has increased image quality. The fire in December 2011 started accidentally in the roof, but the investigation was delayed for weeks because the giant magnet inside the MRI scanner could not be switched off. But lead radiographer Steve Ross said they had taken precautions to make sure that did not happen again. The cable that links the emergency button to the magnet is now fireproof. The fire service also said they did not want to send people through an inferno to turn off the magnet, so we have moved the switch near an exit so they can smash through the door and hit the button. This is something we have learnt from on at a national level. The replacement models were funded by insurance and a £10 million government grant. The unit also has a new control room where images can be displayed from each scanner.
That concludes the headline stories, and we now continue with the death announcements. Atwood. Dorothy May, known as Dot Atwood, in hospital on the 14th of March, aged 87. Bathurst, Basil Bathurst, on the 12th of March, aged 81. Cornelius, Brenda Sarah Cornelius, a Fremantle, on the 11th of March, in hospital, aged 76. Hutchings, John Hutchings, on the 16th of March, aged 78. Lane, William Ernest Frank, known as Ernie Lane, on the 14th of March, aged 83. Payne, Olive May Payne, at home, on the 12th of March, aged 86. Patton, Josie Patton, in hospital on the 13th of March, aged 75. Shelswell, Sheila Shelswell, at Bishop Waltham House Care Home on the 13th of March, aged 83. Smith, Michael John Smith, aged 73. And next, we have Christian comment.
And this week is written by Mary Gray, and she entitles it Pope Francis, A Ray of Hope. The Holy Spirit can still spring surprises. As the world waited for the column of white smoke to rise above the newly constructed chimney over the Vatican, a sign that the College of Cardinals had reached agreement on the new pontiff, predictions from the journalists came thick and fast about the front runners. But they got it so wrong. When the name of Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio from Buenos Aires, Argentina, was announced, there was a stunned silence for a minute. No one had heard of him. The surprise continued. He is a Jesuit and has chosen the name of Francis. And he definitely means St. Francis of Assisi, not St. Francis Xavier, a former missionary in India and China. It is the simplicity and love of poor people that appears to be his reason. We learn that he lived in a simple apartment, avoided restaurants, and travelled by bus. It is this simplicity that has immediately attracted so many people, perhaps as a counter-cultural sign to a society already entrapped in the arms of materialism. But perhaps the most profound and memorable moment of his introduction to the world is that he presented himself on the balcony in front of thousands of people from all parts of the world, not in the brocaded garb of a pope, but in a simple white cassock. And then the real shock. He bowed to the people in the piazza and asked them to pray a blessing down for him before he blessed them. Pope Francis seems a quiet, humble and pastoral man, and as a Latin American, a leader of 51 million Catholics, the largest concentration of Catholics on the planet. His life in Argentina was characterized by commitment to poor people and to opposing structures of poverty. Already, criticisms have emerged about his past actions in the time of the repressive governments, as well as acknowledgement of the fact that he is conservative on many moral issues. Aren't all the cardinals? But let us stay with the hope and inspiration. It was St. Francis who reached out to Muslims, even making peace with the Sultan at the time of the Crusades. It was Francis who loved all creation and listened to every creature in the universe and dialogued even with the birds. It is indisputable that in electing a pope from Latin America, the Church has listened to the signs of the times and altered the axis of Catholicism from Europe to another continent, just as India and China are recognized as emerging economic powers. If Pope Francis, too, is a listener, there is hope for the healing and reconciliation that the Church urgently needs.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do this by either telephoning 01962 860836. I'll repeat that, 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write, in the traditional way, to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. The first three letters concern the Barton Farm development. Thereafter, it's quite an interesting selection of letters about local issues.
And this first letter, which is from John Duckworth, is headed "Relentless Spread of Suburbanisation." "Sir, one must have sympathy with the homeowners on Andover Road North, one of whom wrote to you last week. No doubt at least some made their homes there because they were virtually in the midst of Hampshire's rolling countryside. But until they lived there, had not appreciated that the main northern approach road to Winchester, which it has been since Roman times, constituted a virtual racetrack past their front doors. Nor, probably, had they ever regarded the field on the other side of it being other than farmland. So the reduction in both amount and speed of traffic brought about by the deviation of the Roman road through the vast new housing estate on their doorsteps may be an amelioration of a kind. However, for beg your pardon. However, for those living north of the city, such as those in Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Andover, or coming off the trunk road at Three Maids Hill, it will simply emphasise the apparently relentless spread of suburbanisation, given the scope of the recent changes to the planning laws and the options far-sighted building firms have taken out on farmland adjacent to Winchester. And the only pressure to develop brownfield sites in place of fields seems not to be government, central or local, but the CPRE, to whom I am now diverting all my former political contributions. Others may feel the same." That letter is from John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop, Stockbridge.
And the second letter on the same subject from R.I.L. Howland, and it's headed "Why Did They Agree to Road Closure?" "Sir, Carla Holmes' diversion of the Andover Road in its Barton Farm application has caused comment ranging from puzzlement to anger. Critical opinions came from individual organisations, the Commission for Architecture and the Built Environment, and even the planning inspector and the Secretary of State. Stopping up the old road, as well as the design of the new road, were both criticised. Hampshire County Council recommended refusal of Barton Farm for a number of transport reasons, but said these could be overcome should Carla provide more information and agree to secure off-site highway works and payment of financial contributions. Eventually, the agreement was signed. However, the proposal to stop up the existing Andover Road was not changed and is now part of the agreement. it is worth asking every one of our county councillors why he or she agreed to this road closure, whether all of them had actually understood what they were now agreeing to and what they are now going to do to unagree it. That is from R.I.L. Howland, Park Road, Winchester.
And continuing the theme, here's a letter from Roy Perry, which he's called Demand for Places Rising Nationwide. Sir, I'm afraid Janice Reynolds, in her letter of March the 14th, who suggested a new free primary school at Barton Farm would negate the need for the extra places proposed at Westgate, has not taken into account the existing rise in pupil numbers in the city. Pupil numbers are already rising now, well before a single house is built at Barton Farm, which will, in time, create its own demand for places and, consequently, another new primary school. And developers will be expected to contribute towards the cost of that provision. Demand for a primary school places is rising nationwide. The Audit Commission estimate 250,000 extra places will be needed by 2015. In Winchester, the existing increase in demand is down to a rise in the birth rate, a change in the demography, with more younger families, as well as additional housing already built in the city. Its successful schools are a major factor contributing to the attractions for young families. The places at Westgate will be needed by September 2014, as will additional places at other primaries across the city. In planning those extra places, as well as marshalling the requisite funding, Hampshire County Council will take account of the number of children already here and the legitimate concerns of neighbours to school sites. There is no solution that will resolve every concern, but we shall try. I hope readers will understand and agree when I say it is the needs of Winchester's children that must be our key priority. Roy Perry, Executive Member, Children's Services Department, Hampshire County Council, the Castle, Winchester.
In this letter from Councillor Peter Edgar, Assistant Chief Executive Member for Education at Hampshire County Council, he says that we owe it to those who fell at Gallipoli to preserve this ship. Sir, the editorial comment of the Chronicle that did not support Hampshire County Council's contribution to the preservation of the World War I ship HMS M33 was extremely disappointing. It was no surprise that with the county elections coming up, Councillor Chegwin, a Lib Dem, sought publicity by misleading people, by falsely claiming that libraries and other facilities were under threat of closure, and yet the county was wasting money on an old ship. The decision was made after much thought and investigation by Hampshire County Council officers and members. This is not any old vessel, but one of just two remaining great warships. If Councillor Chegwin really did not want money spent on it, he could have raised it at the Select Committee or the County Council budget meeting. But he was strangely silent. There was a councillor's fact-finding visit to the ship that Councillor Chegwin did not attend either. His opportunist political comments were no surprise, but what was amazing was that Hampshire's oldest and most historic newspaper, The Chronicle, supported his views. I know The Chronicle is based in Winchester, but perhaps it should acknowledge that we have the greatest historic collection of ships and maritime artefacts in the world on the shores of the Portsmouth Harbour communities. HCC has always been a main player in the development of this collection, and for example, the Mary Rose project could probably never have happened without the county's support over many years. It is never the time to invest in the conservation of historic vessels, and if we took the view of Councillor Chegwin and the Chronicle, this renowned collection would not exist today. M33 is the only ship left from the Gallipoli campaign, and with the centenary of that invasion coming up in 2015, it's important that people will be able to visit it. It is an interesting thought that the Portsmouth Heritage Ship collection was originated when HMS Victory was saved for the nation. This was at the time of the 1930s Depression. But who would question that decision today? We owe it to the Anzac troops and the 400,000 British who fought at Gallipoli to keep M33 as a memorial to those who died in the battle and save it as a unique educational heritage attraction for local people and visitors to our historic county. That letter is from Councillor Peter Edgar, Assistant Executive Member for Education, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
The next letter is from HPN Rowe, and it's headed, Council can't claim credit for freeze. Sir, Ken Thornber, leader of Hampshire County Council, has been unusually modest in not claiming all the credit for freezing our council tax again this year, Chronicle March 14th, whilst maintaining and improving services. He generously credits the staff of the council, but it should be remembered it took government to force a freezing of tax some years ago, without which we would have seen the continual annual rises we have been subjected to. Credit where it's due also to the management of the council, which has discovered that it can do its job without unlimited resources. And it is from HPN Rowe, King's Close, Kingsworthy.
Rosemary Poole writes, how one boom begets another. Sir, helpful information from Councillor Tate and a planning officer from the City Council informs us that 2,659 houses were built in Winchester Town, including 991 not yet completed, and 5,182 in Winchester District between 2001 and 2012. I hope very much these numbers were taken into account before the local development framework was drawn up, and that they were made available to the officer whose decision it was that we should build so many thousands more. It seems that one housing boom begets another and another. Rosemary Poole, St James's Villas, Winchester.
Robert Hubbard believes that Silver Hill must be done tastefully. Sir, I read the letters columns in the Hampshire Chronicle each week with great interest, particularly in connection with the Silver Hill and Barton Farm planned developments and the bus services. I hope Silver Hill will be done tastefully and not as I experienced in Northampton, where the escalator from the bus station to the shops was out of order, the alternative being steep concrete steps or a small lift full with two pushchairs. Regarding Barton Farm, I also hope an adequate bus service will be provided, unlike that for Oliver's Battery, where there are hardly any buses, or Highcliffe, where the one bus an hour is an extension of the Teg Down service. Was that an afterthought of the bus company? I have no problem with buses using a partially pedestrianised route past Debenhams and Marks and Spencer. Public transport should have high priority in towns and cities like Winchester. Finally, has anyone in high places ever thought of making the traffic lights at Upper Brook Street, St George's Street corner, and at the bottom of Station Hill into bus priority, i.e. to be green each time a bus appears, thus making bus travel that much quicker? I'd vote for any candidate at the elections in May who advocated such an idea. That's from Robert Hubbard, Spitfire End, Winnell, Winchester.
Next letter is from Councillor Robert Hutchison, and it's headed, Council could be more transparent. Sir, I recently wrote to the leader of Hampshire County Council asking why it was not possible to publish on Hampshire County Council's website all responses received by the County Council to planning applications. Councillor Thornber replied, citing implications concerning the Data Protection Act and resourcing issues. Winchester City Council manages to overcome any problems involved in publishing all responses to planning applications, so why shouldn't the significantly wealthier County Council do likewise? Open government is good in itself. Shouldn't the County Council improve its transparency and service to the public by making better use of its sizeable IT budget? From Councillor Robert Hutchison, Clifton Road, Winchester.
Evelyn Parker, John Leonard and Anne Bristow say, keep Bushfield for everyone to enjoy. Sir, your report last week on Bushfield Camp contains an inadvertent misrepresentation which might lead readers to assume Bushfield Down Supporters Group is an anti-development group. Our campaign began 6 years ago, long before there was any public talk of development. It began in response to the fencing off of parts of the Down, which had, for at least 50 years, been available to the public. The group has never said it wants to prevent totally any form of development on the campsite. It is still the hope of the group to save the Downland. Our ambition has always been to keep the Down for everyone to use. Not only is it one of the backdrops for Winchester, the last piece of Downland west of the Itchen Valley, it is a favourite spot for residents of Stanmore, St Cross, Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery. The legal status of the bid to register it as a village green will be considered in the High Court in June. Evelyn Parker, John Leonard and Anne Bristow for the Bushfield Down Supporters Group, Winchester.
The future lies with shopping online, writes Tony Mundy. Sir, read your recent report, City Should Do More to Promote Businesses, and the comments made by Paul Lewis, owner of the Brooks Centre-based Your Life, Your Style. It is indeed very sad to read of the demise of yet another outlet forced to close because of greedy landlords charging extortionately high rents. Sadly, the concerns he addresses fall on deaf ears. However, my reason for putting pen to paper on this subject is because I have previously predicted that the Brooks Centre is bad news for the majority of outlets that endeavour to take out a lease in the establishment. Prior to Primark opening, city business chiefs confidently predicted that increased footfall would rejuvenate this white elephant. This prediction was backed by Peter Lewis's wife, Julia. To precede my previous correspondence on the subject, I indicated that I was a sceptic and that nothing would change. Footfall would not generate sales. Common sense told me that potential customers of Primark would enter and depart via the street-level front entrance and therefore would not have to enter the actual centre. Moreover, they are visiting for a clothing bargain. My comments were immediately rubbished by Julia Lewis in her response to my letter, and I was referred to as being a cynic, sceptical and unsupportive of the Brooks Centre. Being thick-skinned to boot, I did not respond to her comments because I was confident that I would be proved to be correct. Might I respectfully suggest that our esteemed city business leaders heed the concerns and comments of the likes of Peter and maybe cynical residents similar to me. I have lived, worked, shopped and played in the city for 50 years and have more than adequate experience of the inadequacies of the Brooks Centre and the ability of the city's self-professed business leaders to listen to basic common sense. I hate to state a very obvious fact relating to this particular situation, but the future lies with shopping online, as Your Life, Your Style appears to have recognised. That's from Tony Mundy, Wood Green Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Phil Yates writes concerning changing fortunes of Winchester pubs. Sir, read John Gallion's letter concerning the Queen's Head. He may like to know This watering hole, which stood on the site now occupied by the Upper Brook Street entrance to the Brook Shopping Centre, was, in the late 18th century, the headquarters of the Winchester London Carriers. The pub, with adjoining properties, was demolished in the late 1950s, and the whole area became a car park before the erection of the present shopping centre. Another pub took its place in Stanmore by the name of the New Queen's Head, but as reported recently, closed in 2011 and is now boarded up, possibly to be demolished for redevelopment. With regard to Keith Brothers' wine shop, a beer house existed on this site since 1887. Keith Brothers ran their shop from 1932 to 1987, the whole block being modernised in the 1980s. It is now a Kentucky Fried Chicken takeaway. It's Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Comments hurtful and unfounded, says Mr. T.I. Martin. Sir, I was disappointed and saddened to read Councillor Gentry's criticisms of Horsford Rugby Club. I have, over several years, been involved with the club and been only too happy to sponsor them. I was particularly concerned that he intimated that the club had let down the community and the town council and its members. I see a club at the very heart of the community and prepared to help wherever and whenever it can. Examples are the Watercress Festival and the Horsford Show. 3 years ago, the club started up a minis section, and a lot of members have given a considerable amount of time to encourage young people of the community. I know how hard officials have worked to establish pitches within Albury Park. They have worked with the council and the rugby union, football union. Councillor Gentry assured club officers he knew what he was doing when he negotiated the land purchase. By acting in a very autocratic manner, it is he, I believe, who has put this process at risk. I hope on reflection that he will be able to apologise to Horsford Rugby Club and its officers for his hurtful and unfounded comments. Mr. T.I. Martin, Deva Close, Mitchell Deva.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to some items of historical interest. And we have extracts from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
And from 200 years ago, that's 1813, news is received that the Russian Cossacks entered Berlin. The people became so enraged at the French on hearing these happy tidings that they insulted them wherever they found them. They pulled down the French eagles, and the 600 French soldiers who formed the garrison were obliged to fire on the populace. And in order to save the French and their authorities from a massacre, the principal merchants and other citizens formed a national guard and at last restored tranquility.
100 years ago was 1913. William Boghurst, dealer, pleaded guilty at Magistrates Court to having exposed his child, Doris Mabel, to risk of burning by not having a fire guard, contrary to the Children's Act, 1908. The child was admitted to hospital on March the 3rd, suffering from burns, and died at 10 a.m. on March the 4th. Defendant said he had a fire guard, but had to sell it as they were almost starving.
50 years ago, 1963. Winchester's first exchange with the German city of Gießen last weekend justified the high hopes that had been held out for it. The 25-strong party, headed by the mayor and mayoress, Councillor J.T.S. Hutchins and Dr. Myrtle Hutchins, toured Gießen and its university, talked with leaders of industry and commerce, and ended their stay at a guest performance of the Ballet des Étoiles from Paris.
And 1988, that's 25 years ago, groups fighting to prevent the Department of Transport's M3 proposals believe the marking of the cutting at Twyford Down has strengthened their case. Department of Transport engineers placed two strips of black polythene, each 14 feet wide and almost 1,000 feet long, on the down last Thursday to illustrate the scale of the cutting. It is the first time that the department has ever marked out a motorway in this fashion.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by a little piece of explanation from the Talking Newspaper editorial team. And after that, we will have first person.
Shining a light into some dark corners. Two scandalous stories in our columns this week. Firstly, the HM Inspectorate of Prisons report into the deterioration of standards at Winchester Prison, and secondly, the appalling behaviour of the manager of St Cross Grange Care Home. Both are classic examples of how things go wrong. One where there is a lack of effective management in an organisation where close control is crucial, the other where an individual has too much power and thinks they can get away with anything. The result is an increase in unacceptable conditions at the jail. Two disabled inmates effectively imprisoned within their cell, increasing drug use and a fear of violence, to name three. At the care home, it led to Anne Taylor being struck off for her incredible failure to try to resuscitate a choking resident. The Nursing and Midwifery Council heard that she was regarded as a bit of a Hitler, with junior staff too scared to challenge her. Failings at the prison were exposed by the rigorous inspection procedure, and there are grounds to make them tougher at care homes as well. One sure way to improve standards is by the constant shining of the public spotlight into dark corners and the certainty of a reckoning for those at fault. And the comment from the Winchester Talking News team here: there was a separate news item about the St Cross incident, but to reassure our listeners, we would point out that this incident happened over 4 years ago in 2009.
And first person this week is written by Carly Disease, and he entitles it, "Who Inspects the Inspectors?" The appointment of a new chairman of the Care Quality Commission has no doubt raised a few cheers among patient groups reeling after the revelations of Mid-Staffordshire Hospital. But David Pryor, a poacher turned gamekeeper, he chaired Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, will have his work cut out. The troubles of mid-staffs and similar establishment have, fanned by the media, driven a hue and cry to do something about patient treatment, and rightly so. But hard cases make bad law. There is no doubting the horror stories are real, and something must be done. The question is, can inspection alone deliver higher standards without creating more problems than it solves? Having been closely involved with caring organisations for approaching three decades, I can honestly say no one comes into work in a caring environment hell-bent on giving bad care, let alone causing harm. These days, the training of care staff is professional, painstaking, and ongoing. No longer is being a good sort enough in itself to let loose on patients. However, since its inception, the acronym CQC, that is the Care Quality Commission, has often struck terror into the hearts of those who come under their spotlight during their unannounced visits. It has got better. In its early days, CQC inspectors could turn up at some institutions blithely unaware of the nature of the service they were inspecting. There was a clipboard mentality, with process-driven inspections emphasising paper trails rather than taking a calm, qualitative look at the intrinsic nature of the care being delivered. Inspectors, perhaps because of their own insecurity, could be high-handed too. I recall arriving at one institution I shared just after inspection team had left. It was like a hen house after the fox had been. Some staff were visibly shaking, traumatized by the rudeness and aggression of their recent visitors. Serves them right, some would say. But to allow understandable anger at egregious examples of care to colour the way the thousands of dedicated healthcare workers are treated is just plain wrong. The new CQC chairman, David Pryor, talks about, quote, deep dive, unquote, inspections lasting a month. 1 week in the planning, 2 of inspection, and a week of feedback. Such inspections will put significant strain on staff. Of course, much good can come from such inspections, and health workers shouldn't be precious in principle about them. However, already harassed workers may well crack under the strain, and there is a real onus on the CQC to carry out their inspections with sensitivity. There's a well-known management principle of catching people doing something right. Overbearing inspectors looking for perfection rather than helping iron out faults could easily demoralise a well-functioning organisation. And who will inspect the inspectors?
We now move on to items of general news interest.
And the first one is West Meon wins another award. A Meon Valley village has been named Best in Britain. West Meon was praised for its shops, social life and strong community feel in a Times poll this week. That's the newspaper, The Times. Nearby Cheriton made the list at 27. The idyllic village on the River Itchen earned plaudits for its sport and transport links. The judges also considered schools, scenery and house prices. Vanessa Wills, owner of the stables at West Meon's Black Hedges farmhouse, said, "We've got an award-winning pub, an award-winning shop, an award-winning butcher. I think it has everything you'd like in a chocolate box village." Sandy Worth, who owns a nursery in Cheriton, said, "It's not just a pretty postcard village with a green and a stream running through it. The main thing is the people who live here. Beside it being beautiful, it's such an active village, a place where people don't just look away when they pass you, they look at you and smile." Winchester was recently named one of the South East's best places to live by the Sunday Times.
MP joins committee to stamp out nuisance telephone calls. Winchester MP Steve Bryan has joined a new parliamentary group calling for action on nuisance phone calls. Mr. Bryan believes the problem continues to grow locally. This is something that has increasingly come up through door knocking and general conversation with my constituents, and the effects of these calls really are very disturbing for some people. In May 2011, the Information Commissioner's Office was empowered to fine companies up to £500,000 if they broke the rules on unsolicited texts and phone calls. Last year, it received more than 7,000 complaints, a 43% increase on 2011, when fewer than 5,000 complaints were received. One victim, Alan Gordon of Wentworth Grange, Winchester, said, "These calls are extremely annoying. The people making them are very adept at disguising the real nature of their call. To avoid getting these calls, I can no longer answer a call that does not come from a number I recognise. So I have become uncontactable to a lot of people and organisations."
Hampshire Chronicle did one of their You Say surveys on this problem. The Hampshire Chronicle asked, "How much of a problem do you find sales calls and cold calling?" Steve Furness, 57, taxi driver of Paintersfield St Cross, said, "I get it because I run a taxi company. You can get blocking, but it's not 100%. I get a lot of it from utility companies. I've probably had 50 or 60 ringing and it's costing me money to have a word with them because they get me on my mobile. Becky Cox, 23, a receptionist of Chestnut Avenue, Eastleigh, said, I get it in the mornings. I work 5 days a week, get back at 7 p.m. and they're still at it. They need to respect people, want their evenings to themselves. During the by-election, we were getting 25 calls a day. It got to the point when we didn't want to vote for them. Darius Bright, 21, a baker of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, said, I get them on my mobile. It annoys me. I don't want to talk to people who will try and sell me something I don't need. At home, I get people calling me, trying to get me to remortgage my house, even though I don't own it. And Pamela Vinton, 66, retired of Airlie Road, Winchester, said, I'm fortunate I don't get cold callers at the door. I use the telephone preference service. I got it about a year ago and it's fantastic. I don't think I've had any calls since then, so there are things you can do and I would certainly recommend that. And we just had a quick discussion around the table here at the Talking Newspaper, and we have very, very varied experiences, but generally we too, all of us, seem to get these unsolicited calls, even though some of us are on the telephone preference system. Anyway, I'm sure it's not something we can solve today or even tomorrow, but good luck to Steve Bryan and hopefully he can do something about it. Right, we'll now continue with the items of general news interest.
Residents slam the de-greening of Stanmore. Winchester City councillors will debate a controversial scheme to remodel a council housing estate. The multi-million pound proposals could see green open spaces, allotments and garages in Stanmore turned into 400 new houses and flats over the next decade. There are also proposals to revamp play areas, improve sports facilities and provide new footpaths. Bulldozing the former New Queen's Head pub in Stanmore Lane to make way for a new community and leisure centre is central to the scheme that will come under the spotlight at the Town Forum in Winchester Guildhall at 6:30 p.m. The City Council's offer to buy the disused pub in Stanmore Lane, which had a £1 million price tag, has been accepted by Enterprise Inns. Residents and community groups are being given a say over the proposals, which could see the Carroll Centre, Stanmore and District Community Centre and 8th Winchester Scout Hut relocate from Sammer's Close to the former pub site. Consultants have suggested land vacated by the buildings could be turned into housing, along with part of Sammer's Close recreation ground with the children's play area relocated. Alternative proposals to be considered include building a retail store or housing on the former pub site, extending the Carroll Centre and keeping a standalone Scouts Hut. There is to be month-long public consultation with exhibitions at the Carroll Centre on Tuesday, March the 26th, between 11 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. and Stanmore Primary School on Thursday, April the 18th. But the scheme, which was exclusively revealed by the Hampshire Chronicle 3 weeks ago, has already split opinion on the estate. A number of locals have attacked the scheme, with one critic describing it as de-greening of Stanmore, amid concerns it would destroy the garden suburb style of the estate. Under the proposals, which were drawn up by the City Council's planning consultants, Broadway Mallion, at a cost of £20,000, some 200 new flats could be built on tree-lined Waver Way and grass verges turned into parking. Open spaces earmarked for housing include parts of Cromwell Road recreation ground and the valley near Wilberforce Close and Birch Drive. City Council chiefs say the proposals were drawn up with the aim of identifying ways to improve the estate. Previous consultation with locals identified key issues to be tackled, including providing more affordable homes, better parking, improved community facilities, and a more accessible, quote, heart to Sandmore, unquote. Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, stressed that no decisions had been made. He said, at the moment, all the options are open. Nothing has yet been agreed. The month-long public consultation is just exploring the work consultants have done. We need to have these discussions because we have not had the opportunity yet. Other sites earmarked for housing include two allotment sites at Prince's Place and between Milner Place and Kingsley Place. A council spokesman said, the perception is that not all of the allotments in Stanmore are being used in full, and there could be potential to develop one or two of the allotments least used and improve others, subject to the community's view. However, Jim Parsons, membership secretary of the New Winchester Allotment Society, said all the plots were taken and there was a waiting list. The Prince's Place site has only recently been turned back into allotments after previous suggestions to develop it for housing proved unpopular.
2 hours for ambulance. A catalogue of failures led to an injured woman lying in a Winchester road for hours in the bitter cold before an ambulance arrived, an investigation has revealed. In December, an 86-year-old woman was knocked down in Upper Brook Street, but had to wait 2 hours before she was taken to hospital. South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, initially declined to comment on their investigation, except to issue an apology, but a Freedom of Information request by the Chronicle shows several failures. A report blamed a communication failure within the Emergency Operations Centre. It said other contributing factors were resource pressures, meaning ambulances were queuing throughout the county, including at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and that the workload on December the 17th was 20% above average. The report also pointed to a lack of information from the police on the alleged seriousness. But a spokesman for Hampshire Constabulary said, "We believe officers acted totally appropriately and provided a very good service to this lady. We are not medical professionals, but the assessment of injuries confirmed as correct by the hospital. We supported her throughout the wait for the ambulance and maintained liaison with SCAS." A statement added, "The elderly lady was awake and breathing well and was assessed by local officers as having minor injuries, but they were still concerned for her as they considered her age made her vulnerable and stayed with her. The minor grade of the lady's injuries was confirmed by medical staff at the hospital. The ambulance service is expected to arrive on scene within 20 minutes on 95% of such accidents, and the FOI revealed that Hampshire's present performance for this financial year currently stands at just under 91%. SCAS were asked to explain the communication failure, but at the time of going to press, no response had been received. It is also not known whether any staff were disciplined."
Give us cheaper house prices, residents urge. Alresford residents want to see cheaper house prices rather than social housing schemes in the town over the next 20 years. Around 40 attended a meeting at Alresford Recreation Centre last Wednesday, that's March the 13th, to discuss the 500 homes earmarked for the town in Winchester City Council's local plan. The meeting was organised by the Town Council subgroup on housing, set up to look at the issue following the controversy over the Town Council's plan in the next 20 years, including development off Sun Lane. According to the local plan, 40% of all new housing will be affordable, although shared ownership and cheaper rents. But several residents said more should be done to ensure young people can afford to buy their own homes. Kirsty Williams, 39, of Appledown Lane, said, "I can't see how you're going to be able to bring people into Alresford. You have to save for 10 years to get a deposit together. What do you do if you're not in the right bracket for affordable housing, but you can't afford to buy your own? The City Council is planning to build 12,500 more homes in the district by 2031, with Alresford one of several villages and towns expected to provide sites. The subgroup recruited volunteers to look at affordable housing, market prices and the size of houses to report back in the next meeting on Wednesday, April the 10th. Other subgroups are looking at open spaces, infrastructure and employment generated by the new build, but no decision on sites for the homes will be made until May.
Mayor honours unsung heroes. Dozens of people throughout Winchester were honoured by the Mayor at an awards ceremony last Wednesday, May the 13th. The Mayor's awards recognise individuals, communities or organisations going the extra mile to make the district a better place. The Mayor and Winchester Area Community Action, known as WACA, joined forces to stage the event at the Guildhall, with nominations taken from residents via the district and parish councillors or through the City Council's website. WACA Chief Executive Paul Williams said, "These awards are so important because it recognises volunteers for the unsung work they do. They don't get any money, but with these awards we can show how much we appreciate what they do, and hopefully it shows how other people can get in and have a go themselves."
Morris men twist and twirl in the icy night. Well, it wasn't snowing when Winchester Morris men celebrated their 60th anniversary last week, but it was surreal enough. The white-dressed dancers twisting and twirling in the dark on a freezing cold night under the orange glare of the streetlights. John Holder of Colebrook Place said, "I and a friend, Frank Goh, were having a very quiet drink in the tiny Eclipse pub on this freezing late winter night, when to our great surprise the pub filled with the Morris men and supporters, with hardly one winter coat between them, dressed as if for a perfect summer's day. I didn't have my camera with me, but knew this was a very special event, not to be missed, so I ran all the way to my home and back again to be able to get some photographs. It was incredible to watch the side performing the impromptu outside the pub, even though it was so freezing." The Winchester Morris men were celebrating the 60th anniversary of the formation of their side in 1953. Matthew Wright, recruitment officer, said a great time was had by all, despite the cold weather. He said, "We danced Jockey to the Fair, the first dance the side did in public 60 years ago, and Bonnet So Blue, and I think our fingers were blue by the end because it was so cold. I felt sorry for our musicians, as at least the dancers would keep warm by moving about. But afterwards, we all went in and had a great dinner with some old friends."
Planners turn down snooker hall scheme, a potential white elephant. Confusion surrounds proposals for a Winchester development, with a councillor calling officers' recommendations cloud cuckoo land. Developers want to demolish the old snooker hall in St Cross Road to make way for 9 homes, but officers recommended the plans be rejected because the applicants were no longer willing to provide a new community facility. The planning committee came close to deferring the item after councillors expressed concern at a letter from the developers suggesting maladministration. Mervyn McFarland, on behalf of the applicant, White Leaf Investments Limited, wrote, "The council should be mindful that the delay in bringing this application to committee may well amount to maladministration, causing significant injustice to the applicant." Although some members wanted more time to consider the letter, which had only been received 24 hours earlier, an impromptu vote saw them agree to press ahead. Officials recommended the developers contribute £421,600 towards affordable housing, a figure scoffed at by Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery. I'd love to have that much for affordable housing, but this is cloud cuckoo land. Our policy needs to be transparent and coherent, or we're never going to get development here. Mr. McFarlane said £450,000 is not the right amount of affordable housing contribution. My client is willing to make a contribution of £36,000. The meeting heard that Whiteleaf had withdrawn its original plan to provide a community facility where the Snooker Hall sits, as it would be impossible to secure funding in advance for it, with Mr. McFarlane calling it a potential white elephant. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "It's unfortunate there's been a lack of communication between the applicant and officers, and I think we should try harder. I can't believe the applicant can't find a tenant. It's a sustainable site." Councillor Eileen Berry said, "I have felt uncomfortable about this from the start. There's something wrong with this application. The presentation is not very good. I'm going with the officer's recommendation, not because I'm happy with the presentation, but because I want the applicant to go back and have a dialogue with officers." Councillors voted unanimously to accept the officers' recommendations that planning permission be refused.
Worries deepen over the way local plan is evolving. An Alresford town councillor has voiced concerns about how the authority is tackling the issue of development. The town council is drawing up ideas for the local plan that is demanding 500 homes in Alresford by 2031. A proposal last year by the town council, led by Councillor Roy Gentry, to transfer Perrin School to land off Sun Lane, build 500 homes there, and relocate the Dean industrial estate, was widely criticised. The council has since backtracked and set up a series of consultative groups on employment, infrastructure, recreation and housing to encourage alternative ideas. Councillor Gentry said, "I have serious worries about where we are going with the local plan. All I can see is this heading for disaster. The employment meeting was chaotic, it was postponed, the venue was changed, and a lot of people didn't know what was going on. The website has not been updated. I see no plans to improve that. A questionnaire is set to go out across the town soon to garner more opinions. The subgroups have to pull together their reports for a public meeting on April the 25th.
Students back in bad books over parking. Students at a Winchester college are again causing parking problems in a local suburb, according to residents. Householders in Greenacres, Week, told police they were fed up with drivers parking in their private road, particularly those who appear to be students at Peter Simmons College. Gary McCulloch, 40, of Greenacres, said, "I have become frustrated with my interactions with Peter Simmons, and I don't really feel they are taking this seriously, even though it's their students causing the problem. What happens when someone comes and parks on my driveway? What do I do then?" Police were speaking to residents from Week, Full Flood, Hairstock and Littleton as part of a Partnership and Communities Together, PACT, meeting recently, ironically at the college, designed to keep officers informed of local issues.
Agonising over homes programme. Civic chiefs have admitted they are struggling with a £50 million plan to build 300 homes in Winchester over the next decade. Council leader Keith Wood said that the programme had started slowly because the council had not built its own houses for more than 20 years. It came after Councillor Chris Pines told a cabinet meeting last Wednesday he feared the council had lost momentum and asked for a progress report. Councillor Pines, Labour Group leader, said, "In view of the very slow start we've had to the affordable housing we are trying to achieve across the district, how far short are we on achieving the 30 properties this year? I have a suspicion that we are losing the impetus to provide affordable housing. Are we going to get anywhere near the figures we're aiming at for in the next 2 or 3 years?" The council announced the plans just over a year ago as a major scheme to provide more affordable housing and reduce its 4,000 plus waiting list. Councillor Wood said, "It has not been easy to go from building nil houses for the last 25 years to building a number very quickly, and we do need to look at this again about the way we are working on this, as speed of delivery is not what was anticipated." But Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, disagreed and said that officers were working as quickly as possible. "If anything, our accountant is trying to rein officers in because of the amount of projects we have. We want to get a very clear message that there has been no loss of impetus or momentum on this scheme and it is forward in a timely fashion." Councillor Tate added that work had begun on developments in Micheldever, Itchen Abbas and Otterbourne, but that it was unlikely the council would have finished 60 homes within 2 years. "There is a public consultation for 50 new homes in the Abbots Barton area." He said, "I'm confident that although we will not have built the first 60 houses, we will certainly be a long way towards it and will be on site for all 60. Councillor Victoria Weston added, "We have not lost impetus and all are very supportive of the scheme." The council is shortly to launch a consultation into plans for some 400 homes in the Stanmore area.
PCC unveils plan to keep county safe. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner visits Winchester to unveil his four-year plan to keep our communities safe. Simon Hayes aims to improve frontline policing to deter criminals, place victims and witnesses at the heart of policing and wider criminal justice, work together to reduce crime and antisocial behaviour, and reduce re-offending. Consultation events with the public influenced the Commissioner's process when devising the plan. He also talked with community safety partners who will help deliver the plan along with the police. Mr. Hayes said, "My vision is to make Hampshire and the Isle of Wight even safer by improving community safety, cutting crime, and reducing re-offending. My challenge to the Chief Constable is to build on the areas of excellence and reduce crime and the number of victims even further. My priorities have been driven by the views of the public. I will do my best to ensure they are all delivered by the time my term of office ends."
Basics Bank busier than ever before. Winchester Basics Bank, which provides emergency food and clothes to those in need, has seen a large jump in the number of children provided for. In 2012, they helped 15.7% more children than 2011, whilst the charity also saw a 16% rise in the number of people served with food for 5 days. The figures come in the wake of the organisation doubling its presence in the city. To relieve pressure on the Milland Road facility, a new branch opened at St Barnabas Church Week in February. At their AGM at St Peter's Church on March the 13th, attendees heard how demand for their services was at a high. Last year they supported 2,446 people, distributing 11,859 days' worth of food and 1,068 clothes vouchers. Moira Knappman, Chairman of Trustees, said, "The need for this in Winchester has doubled since we opened, and we are supporting more families than ever." Before opening the Week branch, Lord Plant, patron of the charity, said, "It would be a big mistake to assume that because Winchester is an affluent place, that there are not pockets of people that have this need." Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, Steve Brine, has a collection point at his office in Stockbridge Road. He said, "Our Basics Bank is an efficient organisation that wastes no time or resources. It just pushes help to the front line where it's needed. We are extremely lucky to have them in Winchester." The charity opened in 2004, moving to Highcliffe in 2009, and Ms. Knapman said new volunteers and food donations were always welcomed. For more details, call 01962 855 774. I'll read that again. 01962 855 774.
County honours good neighbours. Hampshire Good Neighbours will be honoured at a ceremony in Winchester. The County Council's Good Neighbours Award scheme recognises people who have made a difference to their community, such as helping elderly people at home, cooking for others, providing transport or making time for a chat. More than 60 will attend the ceremony in the Great Hall, hosted by Hampshire County Council leader Ken Thornber, who said, "Each nominee has made an invaluable contribution and made a huge difference to the lives of their neighbours. Everyone involved has been exceptional in what they have done for older folk in their community." The wards were created by the council in partnership with Age Concern, Brendan Care, Carers Together, the Good Neighbours Support Service and the WRVS.
City councillors endorse one-hour parking plan to deter commuters. A five-year wrangle over parking in a Winchester suburb may have been resolved by civic chiefs this week. City councillors gave the go-ahead for restrictions in Abbots Barton that they hope will stop commuters parking there. On Monday, March the 18th, ward councillor Dominic Hiscock told the Traffic and Parking Committee, "For about the last 5 years, we've been getting fairly constant requests to do something about the parking there. There's no doubt that, as we have gone on, the demand for residence parking has grown." Following an informal consultation with residents, notices went up in January, advertising two-hour limited waiting in the area from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday to Friday, with an exception for permit holders. It also suggested various double yellow line restrictions. The council later received 39 objections to 15 letters of support. Ben Taylor of Francis Gardens told the committee he was unhappy with the double yellow lines and said residents had not been consulted properly. He said, "These yellow line restrictions are totally unnecessary and they serve no purpose. There is no evidence of road traffic accidents or near misses. I've never been informed of any costs by Winchester City Council during the consultation process, but I know there will be. I and my neighbours were asked to decide on it without this information. In my view, that's basically deception." But traffic engineer Neville Crisp insisted that a breakdown of the costs and permits was included in a leaflet drop, although he admitted this was quite a long time ago. Civic chiefs agreed with the officer's recommendations, meaning Abbots Barton will now see 1 hour limited waiting from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday to Friday, with an exception for permit holders. Mr. Crisp said the area would be the first in the city to implement such hours.
This article has introduced to us at the Talking Newspaper a word of which we were hitherto unaware, a noun in fact, which is detectorist. And as I read this, you'll see what that is. The headline is, "Beginner's luck struck gold for detectorist Jeff." Metal detectorist Jeff Cocker had only been pursuing his hobby for a year when he struck gold, literally. The 68-year-old was scouring farmland in Upham when he chanced upon the first of five gold coins dating back to the 1st century BC. Mr. Cocker was with the Southern Detectorists when he found the treasure. He said, "It's amazing. I've only been doing it 2 years and I found it a year ago, so it's quite a find." The Detectorists had the consent of the landowner and Mr. Cocker said he immediately went to the farmer. "First, I showed the farmer and his wife and they were just thrilled to hold it. I thought it was Saxon, But then we posted pictures of it on a forum and someone said, no, it's much older than that. It's Iron Age. Since Portsmouth-based Mr. Cocker had discovered just a single coin at that point, his find did not come under the terms of the Treasure Act 1996, and so he was not obliged to report the find to the coroner. However, a coroner's court in Winchester heard that after the discovery in December 2011, he and other members of his group returned to Upham in January 2012, uncovering a further four Iron Age gold coins and another silver, more recent coin. The coins were sent for evaluation at the British Museum, and coroner for Central Hampshire, Graham Short, said he was satisfied that the find constituted a treasure hoard. The southern detectorists must wait to see if any museums want to buy the coins, with Winchester Museum said to be interested. Speaking after the inquest, Mr. Cocker said, "People spend 20 years and never find one coin."
Woman pays victims. A Winchester woman must compensate two victims she attacked in the city. Shalene Butcher of Kingsley Place, Stanmore, assaulted Jacqueline and Susanna Legg on February the 23rd, Basingstoke magistrates heard. Butcher, 38, admitted the charges and was ordered to pay £50 to each. She was also fined £70 and told to pay a victim surcharge of £20.
Pitch plans still on despite shambles jibe. Plans for new rugby pitches in Oresford remain alive, although the recent dispute was described as a shambles by a town councillor last week. Two five-figure grants are in jeopardy, and as Oresford Rugby Club starts work by the end of June on building the pitches at Oresford Park. The town council last Thursday, March the 14th, agreed to lease the club more land after the earmarked area was found to be too small for two pitches. But the council wants a public meeting held, and also the risks and questions over the lease to be sorted with landowner Rodney Morgan Giles. So it is now a race against time for the paperwork, including planning permission, to be sorted within 3 months. Earlier this month, the Chronicle reported how the club and town council were blaming each other for the problems which could result in grants being lost from Sport England and the Rugby Football Union. Town councillor Natalie Carpenter said, "There has been a complete and utter shambles. It had looked as if the town council may be split over the issue, but in the end it gave conditional backing to the crowd, to the club."
Right, well, on that note of shambles, we conclude our extracts from this week, and we hope that our presentation this week has not been too much of a shambles. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. We won't call them, on the detectorist line, though, we'll continue to call them technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.